Hello, everyone. It's me, Neil Brennan. This is the Blocks Podcast. I'd like to thank Andrew Schultz for letting us use his studio. My guest today is a good buddy of mine, a guy I have admired for 40 years, and more give or take. He was on Seinfeld, and he did Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, and he's got a new Netflix film called Unfrosted that I saw last night, and it's very funny, and his name is Jerry Seinfeld. Hello. Yes.
Hey, kids.
Great to see you.
Good to see you.
Thank you for coming. Tell me about the movie, please. I saw it last night. Everyone in it is funny.
Yeah.
Did it feel like I got mouths to feed? Like I got people coming. Get some jokes ready for Bill Burr.
What are you guys, 5 years old? Little John draws better than that. And I think there's something wrong with him.
Or get some jokes ready for Schumer, or feel like servicing.
A lot of times when you have really funny people, like I was fortunate enough to have, they will think of stuff as you're playing, and you use a lot. I use tons of it. I mean, why wouldn't you? You know, Kyle Dunnigan doing Walter Cronkite's drinking problem.
Yes.
And domestic difficulties. Uh-huh. We did not have that in the script.
Yeah.
That was him.
Yes.
Bill Burr. I assume Jackie's still out buying hats.
Yep.
You know, that was not in the script.
I mean, Cedric, I could tell you guys had fun editing Cedric.
Yeah.
Screaming, Kellogg's. Repeatedly.
Kellogg's. Kellogg's. Best use of niacin was my favorite Cedric
yes.
line.
Yeah. He was,
they Cedric won an award for best use of niacin.
So goddamn funny, Cedric the Entertainer. Yeah. And how did you enjoy the process? Was it any different than anything else you've done?
Yeah, totally different from everything else I've done.
Oh, good. Tell me.
In terms of the, it was everything you and I hate, which is an unwieldy, over-bloated undertaking
mm-hmm.
when we're used to just all I want to do is stand on this surfboard and get down this wave and do my thing. That's what I like to do. That's what you like to do.
Yes. I was saying how invisible the crew was on Comedians in Cars.
Yeah.
There was no, it's just lipstick cameras in a car. Perfect.
Right.
And you don't have to worry about where they're going to park, bathrooms, food.
Yeah.
A crew of 100 people. And then it's like, not even necessarily better than it. It's just different. Do you know what I mean? The jokes aren't 100 times funnier because there's 100 people contributing.
Oh, that's right. Right. In fact, it's usually an inverse ratio. The more help you get, the less funny it will be.
Divided by 100.
Yeah, right.
Because
right.
it's so inconvenient.
Yeah. And, you know, funny is just you're trying to catch a butterfly.
Mm-hmm.
When you have a lot of weight. You know, you don't catch a butterfly with a tank.
Correct.
So when you have a big studio and you have a big budget and you have big stars, you can easily fumble the ball. It's very easy.
I want to get into this more in a bit, but how are you as a leader?
I don't really like it, but I think I'm pretty good at it. Because I like to make people comfortable. I never lose my temper. I always know what's going on. I don't need to be treated special. I don't get off on the power or the position. Doesn't interest me. Just
yeah. You just want to work joke together. Right.
Let's just try and find this. Let's just try and find it here, the two of us in the scene. Same thing we're doing now.
Yeah.
Let's just try and find it.
All right. Let's go back to the beginning. So watch Unfrosted on Netflix. It's fucking hilarious.
Thank you.
You're born in 54.
Okay.
Do you feel like you're not a child of the 50s? Do you consider yourself a child of the 50s?
Well, I was a little kid in the 50s. I was six.
Was there like a hangover in the 60s of the 50s? You know what I mean? Like, did it still
not
kind
really.
Of feel like
that? In those days, son, when you changed decades, it was like curtain down, curtain up, act two.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be a different move. So 1960, the same with from 69 to 70. Same 79 to 80.
I will say there is something 50s-ish about your... Something about you's 50s-ish. Would
yeah.
you agree with that?
A little bit, yeah.
And
yeah.
did you find your like childhood kind of... Were you frustrated? Were you happy?
I was very happy, yeah. Because there were toys.
Great.
There was bikes. There was football and baseball to play with my friends.
Yep.
And there was TV. There was TV. TV was, I mean, I literally hugged it when it came into my house.
You remember when it came?
Yeah. And I remember when my parents got a new TV and I said, could I have the old one in my room when I was probably 10 or 11? And that was, and then it was just 6, 7, 8 hours a day.
And they didn't put, they didn't regulate it at all.
They had no, for a couple of years, my mother got scared of it because she, the face that you have when you're watching TV is scary looking. You know, you look zombified.
And you are.
Yeah. And I had no idea, of course, that I was learning.
Yeah.
I was learning structures of words and syntax and comedic looks and takes and storing all of that.
But you're basically happy. You love TV.
Yeah.
You
love
TV. Entertainment.
I love my bike. I love my friends. Even though I never had a lot of friends because I couldn't deal with the male energy of a group of guys.
Fascinating. Tell me what you mean by that.
Well, let's say we didn't know each other. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Never met.
Uh-huh.
We walk into a party. There's 100 people there. You're going to spot me in 2 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Total stranger. You see the eyes. You see the shape of the face. You go, that guy's got something going on.
Mm-hmm.
That's who I want to talk to.
Yeah.
So that was my childhood. I would spear off weird little kids that felt disassociated as I did and get into stuff. You know, talk jokes and...
And it literally was jokes at that point? Or was it just like, did you see Phil Silvers?
Yeah, I made a short film with my friend Jimmy Tenney in third grade. We made a secret agent movie that was a comedy.
Great.
And then when we heard Get Smart was coming out,
Our idea.
We lost our mind. Yeah.
So you knew what you liked. You found this thing you like, which is, we'll call it entertainment for lack of a better word, comedy, showbiz, television. And are there...
Bits is what I liked.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Were there talk shows then?
Yes, but I didn't watch them.
You were watching...
I was watching Ed Sullivan. That's where I started to see stand-ups. I'm trying to figure out what that was.
And did you go that? Or was it like, huh? Or was it like the...
Well, they were like astronauts to me. I didn't know that was an act. I didn't know any of that was thought of prior to them walking out.
Yeah.
I was stunned by it. And I thought, well, you know, it's like a baseball player. Yeah, I would love to be on the Mets, but I can't do that.
Yeah.
Nobody can do that.
Okay, so then you're high school, college, and then what do you think is going to happen?
And then I think I'm going to write an amusing column for Car and Driver magazine. That's my dream.
So you liked cars by now?
Yeah. Cars.
Did you have one?
Very young, yeah.
Did you have one?
No. No, okay. Well, we're talking 15 now, okay. 14, 15.
And you thought, I'll write for Car and Driver.
Yeah, I'll write an amusing perspective on cars for Car and Driver. That's something I could do. Or I'll write these VW ads that are very clever and funny.
But
and,
you were only interested in marketing for cars.
Yeah.
You were going to write ads,
well,
but cars only.
Well, good advertising really captured me because of the brevity.
Yeah.
You need one great idea and 6 words to make it hit.
Yeah.
Which is the same as a joke.
So you weren't even, you know, it's like a lot of comedians, like I was trying to escape something. It almost feels like you were trying to escape like the mundane parts of life. And you just wanted like a more heightened, like, what is that? What is that car?
No,
what is that?
I mean, I envied the adults for their driver's licenses and their not having to go to school.
Sure.
So I envied them.
A lot to envy.
But I really liked how much fun we had as kids in terms of laughing and acting out really in an infantile, which nothing has changed.
You said
I'm 70. There is no change in how infantile my humor is with my friends.
There are 20 jokes in the movie that I was like, that's a very silly joke. And it's like not a Jerry Seinfeld joke. And I was like, no, but there's more. It's a bigger tent.
Yeah.
Than like you like lots of different kinds of jokes.
I do.
You said something interesting in an interview a long time ago that I read where you said when I was in high school, everyone was funny.
Right.
And then they all stopped and I just kept going, which is exactly how I feel.
Yeah. They went off and got jobs.
Yeah.
And stopped fooling around. And I just didn't want to.
Where did you go?
Well, I went to college. Once I got to Queens College, the city kids that I knew got to be friendly with there. We heard about Andy Kaufman. That was the first thing we heard about. There's a guy in the city who gets up on stage, plays the bongos, and then starts crying uncontrollably as he's playing. As a bit. And we just
and you just go, well,
fantastic.
That's so fucking funny.
We've got to see this guy. We went to the city to see that guy.
Where'd you go?
The Improv.
Incredible. Wait in line, tickets, just a comedy customer.
Right.
That night, do you go?
No.
How long does it take?
It took until I read Ladies and Gentlemen, Lenny Bruce.
Now did he write that? Back. Somebody else wrote it.
It was written by Albert Goldman.
Oh, right.
So now I'm going to go. We're going to go back now to about 18, 19. Okay. I started going to those clubs about 21 or so.
Okay.
So 18 or 19, I'm reading Ladies and Gentlemen, Lenny Bruce, which is this thick. And it's, did you ever read it?
No.
It's great. It's his daily life. It's all the drugs and the prison and all the crap. But I had no interest in any of that. There was one line in there where he would call his mother, Sally Marr, after every show he would do. And one night he calls her in the book and he says to her, I did a new bit tonight. When I heard that, it was like Oppenheimer. I did a new bit tonight.
Shit started.
You mean
flying
the other
around.
Stuff? You know what you're doing? It's all figured out?
Yeah.
Oh, that I think I could do.
Did you have any bits?
I didn't know these guys weren't ad-libbing the entire set.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I thought that's how funny they are.
Did you have any conversational bits at that point? Meaning things you'd said in, you were like, that's a consistent earner, that line.
Are you kidding?
How many?
I had an entire Vegas act.
Just based on.
How many?
Yeah.
30 different bits I would do?
This is what I would like to say, because I was somebody when I did Comedians in Cars, somebody said something about, they're like, it seems like a lot of Jerry writes a lot of his stuff ahead of time. And I was like, first of all, what are you talking about? And secondly, you're 70. You've thought of a lot of different things.
Yes.
Over a long period of time, and you've filed them away. And sometimes you take them out. You've told me bits that didn't quite work that are legitimately funny.
Millions.
They just didn't really, they didn't hit for whatever reason. They didn't, not even didn't hit. They just weren't as good as the other stuff in your act.
Yeah.
So what's the sort of inciting incident that you finally go, all right, so they write bits and then went, and then you see Andy Kaufman and then you go, all right.
And then I see them doing the same stuff night after night. Although I was kind of onto it then because of another book called The Last Laugh by Phil Berger, which was the first book ever written about stand-up comedy, about 73 or 4.
Okay.
And that's when Robert Klein came on the scene in New York and completely took over New York.
And explain what he did to people that don't remember exactly. That was different than other people.
I mean, you have to know the kind of
the context.
History.
Yeah,
you know that comics, stand up comics, were very straight laced in terms of they were very, you know, it was a lot of it was very jokey. I mean, Carlin had come along, didn't see a lot of prior stand up. You'd see him on variety shows,
right?
A little bit on Ed Sullivan. I don't really remember. I've seen him since, but. But Klein came along, and he had a New York aggressiveness and intellect that he did not spare. He did not think, this is too smart for the.
Yeah.
I'm working too smart. He never thinks. And his second special, Robert Klein Revisited, which I watched the other day, still has the greatest footwork I have ever seen on stage. Of a comedian, he pirouettes and dances and moves around that stage so smoothly and sharply, but always, I like guys who attack the audience somewhat. Jay Leno in the 80s. He got up on that stage and it was like he was like a bully.
There was something like sadistic about it.
Yes.
How hard he would kill.
I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved it.
So you love bits. You love messing around. You don't want to get a real job. You want to, and you're like, let me get into that, right?
Neil, in the 70s, this is the tragic turn of American culture.
Uh-huh.
And this was explained to me by Mario Joyner, who cracked this puzzle that I could not figure out. What the hell happened that money became everything? What happened? Because it was not in the 70s. In the 70s, it's how cool is your job? How cool is it what you're doing? If your job's cooler than my job, you beat me. And then...
And no one said, how much are you making?
No. You're doing okay. You're making, yeah. making some, as long as you could live, who cares? And Mario Joyner explained this to me. He said, the 80s was the first time that young guys could make a lot of money fast.
Yeah.
Never existed before. Rich guys were Aristotle Onassis, Andrew Carnegie, shipping, iron.
Yeah.
You know. You
couldn't, not even oil.
You couldn't,
iron. Something iron, more obscure
yeah.
than oil.
Yeah. You couldn't make a lot of money fast in those days.
Yeah.
And some of those guys could. Edison, Ford, you know.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, everybody, all sharp guys in the 80s could make a ton.
And some dull guys, a lot of dull guys. Like
a lot of dull guys, yeah.
Could make a lot of money.
And it has poisoned our culture to this day. It's poison.
Okay.
I tell my kids, I had a bunch of kids around the table last night. And I said to them, some of them are just starting to work. I said, if your work is unfulfilling, the money will be too.
Yeah. You one time said, if you get good at comedy, you'll get the money. Just get good at it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, just get good at it, and then you won't even think about it again.
It's true of most things.
Yeah.
But it's not even the money. It's the value of expertise.
Right.
The value of expertise is so far beyond anything, in my view.
Yeah, I would agree. And the thing I want to talk about with you is that, so then you start doing stand-up. You do it, and you have 30 bits from conversations. You get the left-handed.
No, I had no... Those were just school bits.
Okay. So then...
No, I had to start writing. I started writing.
Okay. How long did you write for before you did your first show?
Not long. Maybe a month.
Okay. How much time you did?
5.
Okay. And it went well?
Yeah.
Great. Then you were sort of not like a big deal at the comic strip, but you sort of rose quickly within the open mic thing?
Yeah, rose quickly. Because I loved it. And I'm going to give you maybe one of the greatest lines about comedy. Chris Rock, who I was talking to the other night, and we kind of cooked this up together. He was talking to me about a young comic. He was trying to give advice, and he was telling him, you make money during the day in comedy. What did you do today? And I said, yeah, we collect it at night, but we make it during the day. When I got the opportunity from NBC to write a series, to do a series with Larry David,
mm-hmm.
and he and I got together, we were ready to work. We knew what working was. We knew what writing was.
From walking around and thinking.
No, from writing. From real writing. He had written a screenplay, Prognosis Negative, and I wrote all my comedy. I wrote it because I like writing.
On paper.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
That's the daytime
work you're talking about.
Yeah. And... just using your head about what am I doing? What do I want to do? What should I do? Why maybe this bit would be better with that bit.
Yeah. Thinking about it. Ruminating,
this is not
obsessing.
Working great. I got to cut it.
Yeah.
And connect it with that. You know, I'm ruminating and obsessing about material.
Yeah. That's to me is the job.
Well, I realized, I watched it happen. You know, I watched guys go up and go down.
Yeah.
Crash. Because they didn't have enough material.
Yeah.
Which no one has, by the way.
Enough material?
Right.
No one has ever had enough material.
No one has ever had enough.
And they never will.
And they never will.
You mark our words.
Yeah.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Guys, you know how this whole podcast is based around the idea of mental health and feeling better and feeling different and changing and hoping and helping and trying and growing? Me neither. Look, You ever have stuff that you just got to talk about, like you want to say to your friend, your partner, your girlfriend, your husband, your what, whoever, just a friend? We all carry around different stressors, big and small. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. Most of my adult life has been about figuring out what I want and then setting boundaries. And one of the biggest helps in that department was going to therapy. It's basically boundary class. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/NEAL today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/NEAL. Go get therapy. It's what I do. It's what anyone, you can't get better doing it yourself. You can't. There is no DIY mental health. Go to therapy, get a little help, BetterHelp. This episode is sponsored by Blue Chew. Let's talk about sex. Guys, remember the days when you were always ready to go? Now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. Listen up, BlueChew.com. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra, Cialis, and Levitra, but in chewable tablets and at a fraction of the cost. You can take them anytime, day or night, so you can plan ahead or be ready whenever an opportunity arises. The process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com, consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. The best part, it's all done online. So no visits to the doctor's office, no awkward conversations, no waiting in line at the pharmacy, no three versions of paperwork, no driver's, nothing. Blue Chew tablets are made in the USA. God bless it. Love it or leave it. And prepared and shipped direct to your door in a discreet package. Does it work? Yes, it works. How do I know? Because I ate it and I got a boner. Don't worry about what happened after that. But let's just say at least one of us was satisfied. It's just insurance. What's the downside? No one's ever gone, man, you were too hard last night, mister. No, people love it. Try it for a month and see. You're going to love it. Blue Chew wants to help you have better sex. Discover your options at BlueChew.com. Chew it and do it. And we've got a special deal for our listeners. Try Blue Chew free when you use our promo code NEAL at checkout. Just pay $5 shipping. That's BlueChew.com. Promo code Neil to receive your first month free. Visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information. And we thank Blue Chew for sponsoring the podcast. Okay, so what were your weak areas when you started doing stand-up?
I actually did well pretty early. I mean, I was 26 when I got on The Tonight Show. I was an open micer at 22.
Yeah, it's pretty quick.
So that's pretty quick. I did not do anything else is probably why I did well. I still really don't do anything else. I did this because of COVID. The movie, right. I did the movie because of COVID.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't perform.
Yeah.
And
hop on a Zoom.
Hop on a Zoom, right. And we wrote the script.
Yeah,
and
mess
then
around.
Netflix said, we want to make it. And then that's how it got made.
Great.
But you like the embryo. You like the genesis.
I'm just interested in you because the thing that I don't know if you've ever talked about publicly or talked about it much is you love track and field. You love the 100-meter dash.
Yes.
Jerry has waxed poetic to me about the 100-meter dash. Explain to people the appeal of the 100-meter dash. Because when I think about you, I think about your love of that and kind of how that relates to stand-up in terms of you don't seem overly competitive, but there's something about excellence that you are obsessed with or animated by.
Well, to answer your 100-meter dash question in three words, how does it relate to stand-up?
Yeah.
Can't fake it.
Yeah. And it's now.
Right.
Go.
Yeah.
Go. Yeah. That's the thing. Whenever I do.
And it's scary. It's scary.
The lining up and the. Because you like. Explain to people just the majesty of the 100 meters to you. Because I've sent you short films about it.
Yeah.
And like, you just, there's something about it that really moves you.
Because you're breaking it, same thing as Sam, you're breaking a human being down to nothing. You've got nothing to help you here. We're going to shoot this gun, and you got to get there before everybody else. Stand-up is 8 o'clock. We've got 5,000 people, and we want you got to destroy them for an hour. And you got nothing in your pocket. Your pockets are empty.
Okay. You've also described stand-up as a journey of finding out who you are.
Who you're not.
Okay.
Even better.
Explain that.
So, like, you're not building something, you're taking things away. Sculpting.
Writing-wise?
No, when you sculpt, when a sculptor removes the stone,
mm-hmm.
and the sculpture is what's left. That's what a stand-up is. I was just talking to somebody trying to explain to them why comedians hate Halloween. We hate it.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing that's fun to us is to be somebody else.
Yeah, as hard as we've worked.
Yeah, it's so annoying. I don't like being anybody. I don't want to pretend to be Dracula. I don't envy or admire Dracula.
It's also, it's way worse.
Yeah.
Than being Jerry Seinfeld or whomever.
Yeah. Right.
What did you like? I'd rather be Neil Brennan.
It wasn't him when I was 11. But
so, what did you break down? That's what I'm. What did you take away? That's what I'm curious about. It's like because you've got in even meditation.
Mm-hmm.
What are you? You're trying to clear your mind, or at least
No. Meditation is just rest.
Okay.
It's deep rest and stress removal.
Okay.
Here's what a great stand-up is. Here is the music of stand-up. Here's why, when it hits you, why it hits you, and what the components are. The components are the idea, the face, the voice, the body. When all four of those things are perfectly in sync, bam, you get Bernie Mac.
I'm going to bust his head to the white meat. I'll slip all over.
And it's just so damn funny. So everything fits together.
Yeah.
Like any good piece of music. When you see these people do music, you know, a combo. I started to watch Whiplash again yesterday.
Yeah.
I just love Whiplash. The visual storytelling in that movie is so damn good.
Yeah.
The little pieces. But when you watch him trying to put the studio band together, Fletcher, played mm-hmm. by J.K. Simmons.
Little trouble there. Let's pick it up at 17.
Everybody's got to come together. That's what makes the piece. Same thing as with the stand-up. When the idea you're projecting, I think this about this. I really think this.
Mm-hmm.
My voice matches. The tone of my voice matches. The look on my face matches. And my physical body matches this idea.
Agreed.
That is a right hand, a Mike Tyson right hand.
Couldn't agree more. I always say that your comedy voice is a clarinet.
Right.
You in particular. Ellen's a flute. Dave is Bugs Bunny. Chris is a chainsaw. Like, really, like it's a, you cut through. Yeah. What I'm wondering is there anything conscious, deliberate, unconscious? Are you a face practicer?
No,
are you,
it's just from performing. It comes from performing.
And do you go into it, I want to try something new in this area? Or is it a feel within the spirit of the joke?
Yes, you got to feel, what is the idea I'm trying to get across? And then how do I embody that? Like, I've been struggling for over a year on this bit about how I don't like poker.
Uh-huh.
I have tried and tried. I don't care
mm-hmm.
that your hand is better than mine. We shuffled the cards. They're all different.
Mm-hmm.
All the hands are different, you know?
Yeah.
So there's a tone there that I'm trying to find.
Yeah.
So that they get right away how I see poker as this idiotic game of, yeah, we all have different cards and these mm-hmm. are better than these. So what? What does that mean?
Yeah.
Why would I care about that?
Every hand is going to be different. And this time I got the better hand.
Right.
It says nothing about me.
Right.
In no way.
I still understand that poker. There's quite a bit of skill involved in poker.
Yes.
But if you never get good at it, it feels dumb to do it.
Yes, I'm with you.
So that's the idea of that joke. But so this line about I try, I just don't care, you know?
Yeah.
So then you're talking about a sound. You're looking for a sound in your voice.
You do that sound incredible. That's like
yeah.
Musically.
Yeah.
I can see it.
Right.
And I'm assuming you could also see it in 1976, 77. Okay, how do you figure out what your good moves are? Just trial and error?
Yeah. What else is there? You can't plan it.
Yeah.
You can't figure it out when you're not on stage. You do sets. Just keep doing your sets. And the audience makes the set.
They tell you who you are.
The audience decides what the set's going to be.
And what is valuable about you.
Mm-hmm.
So meditation, any of that stuff, spiritual pursuits, because you got into meditation in the 70s, right? And as just like, were you trying different modalities of like how to deal with your, do you consider yourself, do you go negative on yourself?
Oh, sure.
What's the tone?
Well, why are you even doing this? You ever hear this on stage while you're performing? Why are you doing this? You shouldn't even be on stage. You should just be a writer. You're obviously just a writer who is performing these things. And the audience can see right through it.
You think that.
Well, the negative voice.
Right.
The negative voice,
that's your negative voice?
Yeah.
You're trying to predict mine?
No, we all have it. All have it.
Even the great Jerry Seinfeld hears a voice. You're not a comedian. You're a writer.
Yeah. You're a writer who's faking being a comedian.
Does it say you should specifically write for Dave Chappelle? Or does it?
No, it doesn't.
Huh. Has it gotten better?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
I mean, we don't lose it. It never dies. But we can de-emphasize it. We can recognize it. We can even play with it. But just to get back, I just wanted to comment on the meditation and the other spiritual things. Comes from the same kind of instinct of comedy of, what is really going on here? You know what I mean? Whenever you make fun of something, the great orgasm Uber bit that you do.
Trying to make a woman have an orgasm is like ordering an Uber, right? Because you open the app and you hit the button and you go, all right, it's coming in 7 minutes. And then a couple minutes pass, you're like, oh, great, it's coming in 2 minutes. All right, I can see the little car, that's good. And then some more time passes, and you're like, it's coming in 5 minutes. Why is that car spinning around like that? Wait a minute, ride canceled. I hope this doesn't affect my rating.
Okay. So what is really going on here with this orgasm? Why is it 5 minutes or 8 minutes?
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah.
That's where that bit begins.
Yes.
And then you find this wonderful analogy and you work it all out. But this is what philosophy is. This is what whatever your spiritual explorations are. Life itself is, there's got to be some better explanation for what's going on than what I could just see.
I had a thought
about
it.
So that's what gets you interested in philosophy.
And right. Let's say meditation, let's say spirituality, whatever you want to call it. You pursued it though, right?
Yes,
were like,
I
this is something
everything.
I need. I need this in my life.
No, I wouldn't say that. I'm just very curious. I'm still a very curious person.
Yeah.
Which that's just you're lucky if you're blessed with that you're just curious. I want to know more about podcasting. I would never do it.
Say that now.
No, I won't do it.
Fine.
No, it's great for you guys. I did it.
Yeah, I know you did Comedians in Cars as a podcast. Like it's
not really. No,
I mean,
I did enough. I put enough out there. They know who I am.
You got the people are pretty clear on what's happening.
Yeah.
Now, do you? Okay, so the spiritual stuff, and it's just born out of curiosity. And
yeah,
then you
curiosity.
You pursue it, and you go, oh, this is better. This is it's easier to be me if I meditate.
It's not spiritual.
Okay. It is for some.
Yeah, it is for some. It is for some.
That's what I'm saying. Like, so for you, it's just more like brain maintenance.
TM, yeah, TM, Transcendental Meditation, yeah. is a westernized version of, you know, Hindu or Indian meditation.
Is that, and you do TM?
Yeah, I do TM, yeah.
Got it.
It's very Western.
Okay.
It's like Barry's boot camp. It's like just some very Western idea
yeah.
of how to do something.
Okay. And you see it as just... good mental health, like maintenance,
more than
upkeep,
mental, physical. I'm tired. I'm working. I'm tired. I got to do a show. I need a quick, deep rest, and I can't do on my own. I can't just lie down and fall asleep. I need a way to rest. This is how you rest.
Great. Okay. So you're doing well at stand up. You're 80, 81, 82, 83. You're,
yeah.
if not the biggest, one of the biggest comedians in the country. Is how do you like your life?
It's pretty good. It's really good. It's great. Except I'm living in L.A.
Okay.
And when you lived in L.A. in the 80s or today, you see all these people doing movies and TV shows, and you go, well, how do you get into that? What's that? I wonder if I would be useful in that. I wonder if I could do that.
Is it a curiosity thing? Is it a status thing? Does it seem like they're doing better? They're cooler? They're... rich or any of that stuff?
I don't know. I mean, that's why you move to LA. Every comic moved to LA to be in movies and television.
Yeah.
We thought that's the next step. People see you, your career gets bigger. I really didn't even want to do it, to be honest with you.
A sitcom.
Yeah, anything.
Anything. You just like being a comedian.
I love being a stand-up comic. I still do.
Yeah, it's the best.
It's the best.
You were a trailblazer. I mean, you guys, late 70s, early 80s, you're opening for music.
All the time.
Who did you normally open for?
You name it. Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons or...
Donna Summer. Like
Lionel Richie, Donna Summer, anybody.
And that
everybody needs 20 minutes when the audience is coming in.
Would you call that hostile territory to do stand-up in?
Yeah. I love that sport. That's a sport.
Opening for
Yeah,
for
they
music.
Don't even want to see this.
Yeah.
And I'm going to make you like it anyway. Kenny Rogers. I did a tour of arena tour with Kenny Rogers. And I was in between the Gatlin brothers
yeah.
and Kenny Rogers. I was in between them while they changed the instruments. Arenas, basketball arenas, deep south.
You once said no one wanted to see a Jew to me about that.
I did.
Yes.
Could be. Certainly, thank God that's gone.
No, that's yeah. those days are over.
Yeah.
It's also, yeah, no, and did it, what did it do, how, did it make you funnier, better comedian, better performance athlete?
Nah.
Nothing.
A little bit. What made me better was after the TV series, playing theaters on big stages. And for the first time, you're looking, well, there's like 40 feet on either side of me. I got to do something with that. I can't just stand here like I did at the Improv.
Mm.
And that started a big new period of growth in the early 90s.
Oh, great.
80s was all comedy club. Just
okay.
stand at the mic.
And you just do the hour.
In the 90s, now you're in a theater.
Yep.
They're paying a lot more money.
Yep.
There's no drinks. There's no food.
They're looking at you.
They're looking at you and you're on a big stage.
Yeah. And you want to use it.
You got it. You have to use it.
Yeah.
You need
great.
To use it. It makes a better show.
Yeah, agreed. Okay, yeah. So your manager hooks it up with NBC. Jerry's done The Tonight Show 15 times. Maybe give him a sitcom, right? That's
right.
The sort of narrative.
That's right.
And you get a deal to do a pilot, and you, what's your relationship with Larry David at this point?
We weren't hangout friends. We were in the bar at Catch a Rising Star friends. Whenever he was there and I was there, we would always have a chat. It was instantly hilarious every single time. And I thought, I would like to do a show that sounds like that. That
great.
Sounds like me and Larry talking.
Anecdotally, you went on vacation this summer on a boat
right.
with Larry David
yes.
and Chris Rock, Amy Schumer,
right.
Judd Apatow.
Right.
Judd told me that you and Larry would talk and him and Rock would lean over to try to hear it. Because it was like, you know, it's like even the Curb finale,
mm-hmm.
a two shot of you guys is like,
Yeah, it was good.
Something that like, yeah, it's just real. It's just it.
Yeah,
you got it.
Yeah, yeah. Always, it's always been there.
And he'd written a screenplay, and he wrote four Fridays, apparently.
Right. Yeah.
But he wasn't an easy sell, I'm betting, in terms of Jerry Seinfeld's going to do a sitcom, and he's going to do it with.
No, at first it wasn't. It wasn't difficult. It was fun. When you get into doing 22, 26 episodes a year, then it became a much more difficult.
But I'm saying, like, you say, I want to write it with this guy.
Yeah.
And they're fine with that?
No, they were not fine with that.
Yeah.
No.
And you
but
had...
I said, well, that's what I'm doing.
Well, that's what I'm interested in, is this spirit in you that goes, no, it's this guy. It's I'm going to do my, I have an idea about comedy. I'm going to do it this way. I have an idea about like comedy energy, and I want to do it with this guy. And people go, no, don't do it. And you go, I don't know what to tell you.
Right.
And you've always just sort of been confident in that. And you would have rather lost with Larry than won with somebody more reputable.
Of course, no one ever faces that choice. And nor did it matter to me, because I just knew Dave Letterman, I have to say, gave me, I told him I'm writing this pilot for NBC. It was one of his year-end Christmas parties or something. Mm-hmm. He said, just make sure you fail doing exactly what you want to do. He told me that. And that's the best advice you can give someone going in this, a big, scary project. Make sure you fail doing it exactly the way you want it. Because that you can live with.
Yes.
That you can live with. When it's someone else's idea that kills you, that's hard to live with.
Yeah, that's, you'll be homicidal.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the show gets picked up. It's going pretty good.
Yeah.
How did you like that process? Because I'm curious, like, I watched the show, and I just think about how hard the entire thing must have been,
mm-hmm,
for you and Larry, but I would argue probably more you, because you have more stuff that you have to do.
Yeah, I had more stuff, but I had Larry.
Right.
I had Larry. And Larry, really, I don't know if he knew this stuff or he learned it as we were doing it, but he knew exactly what the hell he was doing from day one, and he was amazing at it. Particularly which stories to do, how to structure them. It took me years before I even got interested in that. I couldn't take, breaking stories just made me fall asleep. I didn't like stories. I'm sick of people talking about stories. You know, I want to tell stories.
It's nauseating when people say, I'm a storyteller. Oh, shut
God.
Up. But so what did you, how would you guys write it?
He would figure out the basic story structure. I would try to help. In the early years, I was not good at it. He was great at it. And when we got to the dialogue, that's where we were good together. Together, we could churn out the dialogue.
So
really
that's
fast.
When it becomes the bar at the strip or
right.
at Catch a Rise
Star.
Right. Like, and then ideas.
We need a funny line to end this scene. That's where I'm good.
Great.
You know?
And probably in the middle and the beginning as well.
Yeah. But he was also great.
No. Yeah. I'm just saying, like, I'm not even trying to like discredit your, but I just think about the process for you work wise. Are you, so you're watching casting with him?
Yes.
You're
We're
going over
edits,
sets.
Every rewrite. We did every rewrite together.
And that's just
the
you,
two of us.
Just you
just
and him in a room.
Yeah.
So you explained the process to me one time, but I want people to hear, like you said, we just show up 5 minutes of small talk.
Right, I'm right at it.
And just go.
Go.
You have a good weekend? Yep, me too.
Yep.
Let's go. And
there's
then
there's always a couple funny stories.
Sure.
You know.
Sure.
Yeah.
But and then you would just get into it. And we're talking about 16-hour days?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And are you meditating during the day?
Yes. I would, instead of lunch, I would do my TM, and then I would eat while I was working.
Great, which That's people it. Love.
Yeah. But it was just me and Larry.
Oh, right. So yeah, everybody,
gonna, no problem.
Yeah, take your shirt off if you
want.
And what do you think of Larry when you see them. Meaning, we
today
talk
or then?
Then and
the
now. It's what do you think?
I just think it's just like your favorite dog or something. Your heart leaps, you know, because I just love him and I think he's a genius and he's, you know, Curb Your Enthusiasm. Everybody got to see this guy that I had known all that time. And you see why this guy's so fantastic? He's so funny, you know?
Yeah.
And what people did not understand and still don't really understand, and someone told me, Larry said it to them the other day, is how our two brains melded together seamlessly. People think that, oh, he's the kind of darker, more cynical one. I'm the sunnier with it. Maybe that's true, we're actually.
But I also think you're darker than people think, and he's lighter than people think.
That's correct.
Like
you're that's the Brennan eyeball.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's the brand that very few people have, of course.
Yes, of course.
In
thank
fact,
you.
Only
it's,
one.
It's an heirloom.
Larry used to say, it was always make me funny, that I don't get enough credit for as misanthropic as I am.
I don't get
enough credit for it.
You're way darker than people would think.
Yeah.
Okay, so this show's incredibly hard. You'd get picked up for 20 episodes, and then he would hate it, right?
Well, it was inhuman.
It's an Iron Man. It's like you're running an Iron Man every day, pretty much.
We would write 60 pages in 3 days.
Yeah.
And it's all killer stuff.
Yeah.
And then once you do that once, that's the standard. Now we got to do it again
times.
Next week.
Yeah. No, I one time asked a friend of mine who was like a religious Seinfeld viewer, I would go, how many episodes were good? And he was like, kind of all of them.
The truth is
he said 85.
That's good.
Percent. Yeah. I just was flattering you.
Thank you.
It's called show business.
I
well,
appreciate
welcome.
That.
Have a seat.
I'll take it.
He leaves the show.
Right.
And then what do you think when he leaves the show in terms of, is it a bit of like a fuck? All right. This has just got harder.
It's going to be different. I knew it wasn't the right time for the show to end. And I thought, well, I'll have to learn some stuff here that I'll have to evolve.
And what do you remember the big evolution points for you in that regard?
I really had to know which stories we're doing and which stories we're not doing. Whereas usually Larry would take care of that.
Like, which ones are worth doing?
Yes. Because writers are pitching you stories all the time.
Yeah.
What about this? What about this? What about this? And together, it was so easy for us to pick the winners.
Yeah.
The same way, if you look at the bench of that show, you know, the actors that would come in occasionally.
Yeah.
When Patrick Warburton walks in, we don't know what this guy is doing. But he's on the show.
Yeah.
You know, when Wayne Knight comes in.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's going to be on this show.
Yeah. A bunch.
Nobody slipped through our fingers. Nobody.
Because
we're both stand-ups. You see it a mile away. Yeah. That guy's funny. Yeah. I don't know why. I don't even know what he's doing.
Yeah. No, you absolutely.
Right? But you just know it. Definition of pornography. You know it when you see it.
Correct. Okay, so the popularity of it, and I don't mean like the trappings and the money and stuff. When it was... the level of popularity it got to, and it still is, did it feel, how much validation did you get from it? Did you feel like I'm doing something, I'm like in the pocket?
Yeah, but you got to understand, I'm not dumb enough to think this is me. I did get caught in a beautiful cyclonic weather event. Jason, Michael, Julia, Larry, 13 phenomenal comedy writers. And this thing is gaining steam. And everyone on both sides of the camera is a killer. That's a cyclonic comedic event. And I've talked to Paul McCartney, excuse the name drop, about it. When you're in one of these things, you know you're in it, but you also know if you're smart, it's not you. It's not all you. You're part of it. But it's not all you.
And you were, that was an easy calculation for you to understand.
I have never had, I have a lot of confidence, but I'm not in the ego fame business. I don't, please excuse this horrible expression. I don't get off on it.
Yeah.
I get off on, that was a really nice piece of work that we executed well and the audience loved it. That's nice. I'm really glad that happened.
Yeah,
and I somewhat separate from it. I don't, if they don't, if I had a rough set, I didn't think they don't like me. I just think that was poorly done work. I have to do a better quality work.
And you're into the craftsmanship?
Yeah, craft and the craftsmanship.
And
every once in a while, a little inspiration will take you beyond that.
Meaning the show. Or yeah. Episode, yeah, a collect, enough five episodes in a season that are like, wow.
Yeah. And then you're just hanging on to a bull in a rodeo.
And trying not to get bucked off.
Yeah.
Or fuck the bull up. Or just say the wrong thing to the bull.
Right.
And is that, is there, it's like the, is art, is it spiritual? Do you look any deeper into it? Other than I'm just obeying this, I'm following this muse or following this thing, this tone I hear in my head. Is there, are there better ways to sort of think about it or feel your way through it than others?
The best way to think about it is, again, I'll go back to a really great stand-up set. You just go, oh, I caught this wave just right. Just make sure, just stay on the board. Concentrate, stay on the board, don't listen to anything else, and just focus.
Run your plan.
Yeah, stay on the board. So whether it's 9 years of working on the series or a great stand-up special like you just did, you know when you're in it, I'm on the board, and this is working, and I'm just going to stay there. So it's more about just clearing distraction as best you can. No one can completely. Look at what's working, stay with what's working, and enjoy that the energy has just picked you up.
Yeah.
It's an energy that picks you up, right? The audience is 3,000 times your size. They're picking you up and tossing you through it.
Yeah.
That's what it's about. The energy, the moment of energy, it's what it's about for you. It's what it's about for them. That's why the live show is the ultimate for everyone. That's when you really feel it, you know. People are going to these shows because they need to get out of their life. They need a break. You don't get it. You know, you get it somewhat on TV, you know, but the people that are in your crowd, they really, you know, they get a break in their life.
Yeah, they get transported.
Yeah.
Out of their life.
Right. So there are moments, you know, I mean, a lot of comedians have had them. When you're getting to them well enough, I've heard people, they just yell out, I love you. Because you have removed their consciousness in a way that is difficult. And when you do that for people, it's a great, it's a nice thing. It feels great.
It feels as
you
good as
you sweat to do that.
Yeah.
Because you get it too.
Yeah.
You're feeling it too.
Yeah. My favorite is after Eddie Murphy does the barbecue.
Yeah.
Someone yells out, do it again.
Do the shit again.
Literally, it's in the show. Someone yells out, do it again.
Right.
It's incredible. Look, I don't know what you call your junk or whatever you call it, but our friends at Manscaped refer to them as the boys. Not every man has children, but every man is responsible for their two boys below the waist. When the little guys have more hair than they need, which is kind of always, trust Manscaped for all your grooming dreams. Boys need love too, so join the 10 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com and use code Neil for 20% off plus free shipping. You heard it here. The boys are back in town. I used literally my Manscaped product yesterday. You can imagine why. My testicles and inner legs were too hairy. Is that what you wanted? You got it. Introducing the Lawnmower family, including the Lawnmower 3.0 Plus, the 4.0 Pro and the 5.0 Ultra. Yep, three ball trimmers. Isn't that sweet? For the basic trim, go with the 3.0 and work your way up to the 4.0 and the 5.0 for the ultimate grooming experience. Taking it on the go, Manscaped has you covered. These trimmers come with a travel case and even a travel lock feature to avoid any accidental powering and or weird looks in the airport. Sounds like a vibrator is what they're getting at. This right here is the cutting edge of cutting pubes. Upgrade your ball trimmer and your life will follow. That's it. I think Walt Whitman said that. Get 20% off plus free shipping with code NEAL at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code NEAL at manscaped.com for the best your boys have ever looked. Trust Manscaped. Guys, this is an urgent public service announcement. Think you mastered the look in sweatpants and joggers? You're one step away from pajamas in public, dummy. Your significant other said you look like a slob, and it's time to show your sexy ass in jeans. If you take anything from our show today, it's that the perfect jean isn't just another pair of stiff, uncomfortable, nut-crushing pants. They've cracked the code to solving all your denim difficulties. The Perfect Jean makes great-looking, perfect-fitting jeans. Look at me in them. They're as comfortable as sweatpants and more stretchy than a kangaroo's pouch. It's made from the special denim fabric that's super soft, just like sweatpants and joggers, but doesn't make you look like a slob. That's how your girlfriend says it. You look like a slob. And the best part, they make six fits from skinny to thick. Waist sizes from 26 to 50. And lengths from 26 to 38. For a limited time, our listeners get 15% off their first order plus free shipping at theperfectjean.nyc or Google the Perfect Jean and use code NEAL15 for 15% off. Again, I wear the jeans myself. I've worn them. I didn't know if they were coming back as a sponsor. I was still wearing them. They're just good. They're tight and they're stretchy. And you know how I've been working on my glutes for the last 5 years and I've gotten them from a 3 to a 6.5? Well, come around me and you're going to see what I mean. They're very good. You can move. They're just great. They're awesome. It's finally time to stop crushing your balls in uncomfortable jeans by going to theperfectjean.nyc. Our listeners get 15% off your first order plus free shipping, free returns, and free exchanges when you use code NEAL15 at checkout. That's 15% off for new customers at theperfectjean.nyc with promo code NEAL15. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Fuck your khakis and get your perfect jean. NEAL15. NEAL15. That's the code. You said something to me one time about the life when you're doing the show and the what it does to your life, sort of all consuming. And you just thought, let me take this period of my life to do it and I'll be set.
You're talking about the series?
Yeah,
now.
The series, yeah.
Well, I knew it would establish me in a way that I could kind of do whatever I wanted after that or nothing.
You knew it was like, no, I'm just paying a cost right now, lifestyle hours.
Yeah.
And by the way, not it's you're going to be consumed with it anyway. So
right.
And it's 52 weeks a year.
No,
job.
Not 52 weeks. It was 9 months a year, I would say.
And then you can take time off and kind of not think about it? Or was it always kind of in the back of your head percolating?
Yeah, like, yeah. It's plots always there. But you would rest. You would. I mean, you know, that... comics are not built to go into an office and work all day.
I know.
We don't know how to do that.
Yeah. No.
But that's what I had to learn how to do.
It's like being a
zoo. Larry was amazing. Larry is the most disciplined worker. The most disciplined.
More than you.
More than me. He'd go in on Saturday and I go, do you need me today? He goes, nah, I'm just going to play with this myself. You can come in tomorrow, you know.
What a gift.
Yeah.
I mean, for you, to know. And then you get a script, a popping hot Larry David draft.
Well, he wouldn't write a draft.
He wouldn't.
He would come up with an outline and we would write the draft. We always wrote everything line by line together.
Great. Yeah. Okay. Finish the show. Now you're on the street.
Mm-hmm.
Regular guy.
Mm-hmm.
Now do you make the conscious decision? We've talked about, you were 46, 47 when the show ended.
Right.
You're curious about family, mm-hmm. kids. you're sort of generally curious, a thing you think you might do, might not do, could take it or leave it. Where are you with that?
At that point, you know, comedians, like a lot of people, sadly, don't think they're aging.
Mm-hmm. You've aged real nice.
Thank you.
FYI.
Thank you very much. Yeah. I'm 70.
I know.
So even in my mid-40s, I thought I'm a young single guy. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't think anything was... I really didn't realize. This is an unconscious quality that comedians also have, right?
Yeah, that you go, wait, what?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
I'm like this, I'm my spirit. I'm not like this body. And I'm...
Right, right. Life is a kind of, it's a diorama, isn't it? Uh-huh. It's a scene in a box, mm-hmm. a glass box.
Yeah.
The real life that people live. When we're not doing comedy, everything else that you're doing, relationships and going out with people, all that stuff, it's all just... I'm not really part of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's split consciousness, and it's like 70% comedy and 30% like, what do you need me to do?
Exactly.
What do I have to, what fork do I use? But it's not necessarily the fork, but it's the...
But when you get on stage, you pull the canopy down on the fighter, you light up the jets.
Uh-huh.
Now I'm locked in. Now I know what I'm doing.
Okay.
Now I'm connected to something. Right? Everything else is some form of disconnect.
Yes. Yes.
This is what the Blocks podcast is about.
Correct.
Getting to that.
How did it...
So I'm 46 years old, and I meet this wonderful, amazing girl.
Mm-hmm.
I never met anybody like it.
Mm-hmm.
We have a great time together.
Just has a very clear personality.
Very clear personality. Extremely bright, funny, extremely attractive. And I just thought, oh, this is another life I could lead. I could lead a life with her. I could visit another planet, which I don't think I'm qualified to
do. Not your home planet.
Not my home planet, and not a planet I think I'm meant to be on. I have comedian friends. I've seen them attempt, you know, we're not cut out for it.
I say we look like a grizzly bear riding a tricycle.
That's right. Perfect.
We can do it.
You could teach one to do
The unicycle.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can do it, but I don't know what I'm even doing.
Right.
I'm just being told this is how you do
it. Right. And then you find out that's just being a guy. But anyway, so because I met her, I decided I'm open to this. And I am going to have to become a different guy, but she's worth it.
Great.
Yeah.
And then you start having kids.
Right.
Can you tell the Warren Beatty anecdote?
Sure. It's heartbreaking, though. You sure?
Yeah. If it's the one I think it is.
It is the one you think it is.
Warren Beatty, one of the biggest movie stars of the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Just so to have, for
he was very
context.
Friendly. Him and Gary Shandling struck up a friendship. Yes. And Gary schlepped me along a handful of nights. And he had just started having kids.
In his 50s, right?
I guess so.
Late 40s.
Gary and I, of course, had no idea what he was doing or why.
Yeah.
And
why is this bear riding a unicycle? Yeah. Go ahead.
And we would kind of question him about it. You know, what's it like? You know, what are you doing? I remember him taking me into a room in his mansion, and it was filled with toys. He goes, "This used to be my office." And then there was just this room filled with little kid toys. And, you know, again, disconnected. You don't understand it. He said, and this must be his line. He says, one of the nice things God does is that he doesn't let people who don't have kids know what they're missing. That's the line you mean.
Yes.
Yes.
And then you have them and a part of your brain opens up.
Yeah. And then a network opens up that you didn't know was in there.
Yeah.
And you go, oh.
Okay.
Okay. So there's another side to this sex thing. The sex thing seems very interesting and stimulating.
Great.
But they don't just do it for that. They had another, there's a second act to this play.
Yes.
There's a reason they made it like that.
As exciting and
interesting as it is.
Yes. This is a different, more profound, having a child and is more profound and more interesting.
I used to say, well, anything could be interesting, but I used to say it's like having sex from the other side.
I don't even know what that means. But
well, you're on one side when you have sex, right? You're
right.
On one side. There's another side. There's a whole other side.
Right, yes. It's like the alternative world.
Yeah.
I've never really heard you talk about being a parent.
Mm-hmm.
You've told me about it, but I just want you to, I want other people to hear it because the way you talk about it, because I've recently sort of, I'm involved, I have a girlfriend and she has a kid, and it's like, I think about you a lot because you're right about that part of your brain opening up, or Warren's right, or whatever. And it's a unique tone of experience. And it's great.
Yeah.
What surprised you about being a parent?
It's nothing. There's nothing that you expect. So it's all a surprise. Well, the surprise is that you didn't ever think you could do it. And you find out you can.
How does it make you feel differently about yourself? Like, I'm a warmer person than I thought. I'm a more generous person than I thought. Kinder.
It's fun. You know what's really fun? I had kids over my house the other night, and this kid comes over to me. He's
your youngest son is how old? 15?
He's 18.
18.
My youngest. But this little kid comes over to me, and he's 6. And I have no trouble striking up a conversation with him and engaging with him. And that is when you have kids, you know, I know every age. I know what they think. I know what they could talk about and what they can't talk about. And I like them. I never was a kid person before.
Yep.
I never knew or liked a kid. My sister had a son. Of course, I had a good relationship with him, but I wasn't, you know, it's just another thing of life. It's another thing you think you can't do.
Mm-hmm.
Like directing this movie.
Yeah.
Another thing you think you can't do. And maybe you can, maybe you can't. That's irrelevant. That's irrelevant. You can or you can't. What's relevant is you dive in. That's relevant.
Yeah. You, yes.
Because whatever, however it comes out, is worth it. Failure is just as worth it as success.
Because of the experience or because of the effort or the, because of the initial guts to do it.
Because everything contains a reward of some kind. It's your job to find it.
And you've talked about being a parent. You once said, almost every interaction I have with my kids, they walk out of the room. And I think that's the greatest moment of my life.
It might have been the greatest moment of my life, you think? Yeah.
Just that little interaction.
Did I say that to you?
You said that to me.
Wow.
you just told me a little too much.
It sounds like I'm trying to sell you something.
No, you were just talking about being a dad and how great it is.
Yeah.
And this is the great Jerry Seinfeld accomplishments, all that stuff. But just this interaction with your child.
I always talk about, I know this woman, she's a psychologist, and she heard me talking about, people talk about quality time. I'm in the garbage time. People talk about, you want to have garbage time with your kids when nothing's happening. And it's 11:30 and one of them says, you want to have cereal.
Great. We're like, do I? I'm fucking Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah. And it's just garbage
it's time. All I
you're
have.
Just sitting there. You're not even talking.
Yeah. You're just sharing.
It's nothing. But it's everything.
Because it's, you're connected and you're just sharing the same experience and it's...
I don't even know what it is. It's, I don't know. You want to feel like, you got to feel like you took a shot in life. You got to feel that at the end, right?
Yeah.
You got to feel that. Win or lose, as I say, not as relevant as I'm going to take a shot.
Yeah.
How did you become a comedian? You didn't really think thousands of people will love hearing me talk. You didn't think that. I didn't think that.
No.
But that dive off the cliff, that's it.
Well, it's the impulse of like, I don't know, I got to do it.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have to do, I saw this. I have to go to space like those astronauts.
Right.
Why? How come? I don't know.
I used to say being a comedian is like being a murderer. No matter what people tell you, you're probably going to do it anyway.
Okay, so the adjustment to being a civilian, from being a guy, center of attention, center of production, center of.
When are we now?
We're back. You just left the show, and now you're a family man, and you're adjusting to civilian
life. But I'm in
life.
New York. I'm in New York City.
Right.
Where even rich, successful guys get married and have families. That was an advantage. In L.A., guys, they didn't do that. Why would I do that?
For what?
For what? In New York, successful guys try and have normal lives.
Yeah.
I don't know if they succeed, but it's kind of a normal place.
Yeah,
compared to L.A.
And did you adjust? You once said it took you a while to figure out how to talk to normal people.
Still trying.
Yeah, and how's it going?
Up and down.
Okay, fair enough. This is for all of us.
Yeah.
So then you started doing Comedians in Cars, and
I made B movie.
You made B movie.
That took 4 years.
Yeah, that took 4 years.
I thought cartoons. I love cartoons. When I was a kid, I wanted to make a cartoon.
Am I wrong with the arc of B movie? It wasn't like beloved when it came out, and its popularity has grown over time.
It did well, not great.
Yeah,
when it came out, it did fine, and then it kind of became another thing. The 6 year old was talking to me about it last night.
He'd seen it.
He'd seen it. Yeah,
he's familiar with your work.
Yeah,
and what did he want to know?
Do you like jazz? You like jazz?
Okay, that's the question.
Yeah.
Okay, so you start. So you do B movie. You do Comedians in Cars. The thing that I loved about Comedians in Cars is that people will, once you say it, they'll, of course. That, how did you edit Comedians in Cars? So you go, you film for 4 to 6 hours with people, and
not
then,
that long, but
or 3 hours,
yeah,
4 hours,
3 hours.
And then what's the editing process like?
It's rough.
How come?
Why is it rough?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, you got to live the same day again.
Yeah.
You got to do that 3 hours again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my weird. Point,
what I'm trying to get to is because you sit in the edit and watch every frame of
it. Yes, because I know it's funny when the guy doesn't say anything.
Right.
When I ask him that and he just kept chewing, that's funny.
Yes.
And you can't ask. I had a great editor.
Yeah.
I had roomfuls of editors.
Yeah.
But you got to find those little, it's the little comedian things.
Yes.
That's what I want to show people. Look at how weird we are.
Yeah. And yes. And what I'm saying is like, you got to do it yourself.
Yeah.
It can't, there's no substitute for whatever's in here. You can't be taught, can't be sold. Can't master. You know how it should be,
right?
And what I'm saying is, like, anything good is a pain.
I think a pain is simplistic and unfair.
Yes. Okay,
it's unfair.
Arduous, effortful, requires full effort.
The more you struggle, the better you get.
Yeah,
struggle is. Let's say a struggle is its own reward. This is maybe a Zen concept. Or,
yes.
You know, the struggle's the point. That's where you're becoming different. In that struggle, you're becoming different. So you've got a girlfriend, has a kid now.
Mm-hmm.
This is a new thing.
Yeah.
Bit of a struggle. But you can feel yourself changing, adding, adjusting parts of yourself to do this.
Yes.
That's its... That has tremendous value, just that. Even if the whole thing explodes in 3 weeks from now, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Was that a waste? No.
No.
There is no waste.
No. Did you hear Giannis Antetokounmpo, the basketball player, talk about losing?
Oh, the greatest.
There's no failure in sports. You know, there's good days, bad days. Some days you are able to be successful. Some days you're not. Some days it's your turn. Some days it's not your turn. And that's what sports is about. You don't always win. Michael Jordan played 15 years, won 6 championships. The other 9 years was a failure.
That's an all-time moment.
Incredible.
Really incredible.
Yeah.
And he got a lot of well-deserved credit for it.
Yeah. That's who he is, by the way.
Right.
He's like, that's
right.
Really who he is.
Do you consider the season a failure? Was that the question?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it was like, failure. What do you talk? It's yeah. He's great.
Yeah, he's great.
The thing that I'm not even struck by. Well, I'm struck by why, when I watch Comedians in Cars, and when I did it, and knowing you, is that you're a very generous person. You're a generous laugher. I literally wrote down generosity and curiosity. Was that always true? Did success make that easier to access?
No.
You've always
what
been...
What you call generosity, comedy, it's just, I love it. It makes me laugh. Somebody says something funny, I can't not laugh.
Yeah.
Even though I do a lot of, that's funny. You know, sure. I do that. Curiosity, I don't know where that comes from.
Yeah. When I think of you, here's what I think.
You did a lot of prep. That's very impressive.
When I think of you, you are a one man generator of culture, a lot of culture for a long time. Stand up, sitcom, B movie, Meritreff, all of it. The Comedians, just stand up, Unfrosted, now streaming. Please. I feel like you believe in optimization. There's a spiritual component. You want to be so optimized as a comedian, as a editor, that there's something spiritual about it or something. Or is it just excellence for its own sake?
I think the thing that I'm drawn to, if we're trying to find, is purity and quality, which are the same thing to mm-hmm. me. You know, a thing that has nothing it doesn't need, no excess, no wrongness about it, that's a measure of quality. I don't know, that word, that concept, I would say is almost a spiritual concept to me, a thing of quality. And I'm talking about a pair of sneakers, your glasses, comedy bit.
Yeah.
Ooh, that was good. To seeking and pursuing it, yeah, I guess there's a kind of a spiritual journey of that.
Like a transformation from like a blob to this perfect, optimized thing. You love watches, you love cars.
Yeah.
You love sprinting. You love like shave it down. Process it.
Who's the fastest guy, really?
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And
yeah. But and we're gonna find out.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. We sure are.
Right.
And there might be a false start. We're gonna find out in 2 minutes from now. But you're not. You don't seem openly competitive. It's like
no.
It's
no,
for no. its own sake.
For its own sake.
The beauty of this creation.
Yes.
It's about the process of getting there and also the result so that it lives as this existing thing.
Right.
Do you look at your work and survey the land, the whole body of work, 40 years, and what do you think of it? Do you think like there were times where, or you just stay out, it's almost none of your business?
It's almost none of my business. And when someone likes something, I'm so grateful and appreciative because I like doing it for you.
Yeah.
I don't really know how it happened either. So I'm glad it worked out for both of us.
Yeah.
But it's all somewhat mystical. And I'm just glad that I've somehow found myself in a position to enable it.
Do you... not even like to look at the mystical elements of it?
Mystical like, being?
Like the musical note or the ping, like the thing that you're, it's like, just, you know, like I want the diner to look a certain way. I want this car for that person. I want just the way you once were proud of how quickly you took the mic out of the stand.
Yeah. Are you kidding me?
Right. Like the perfection of it. Is it, are you serving anything or you're just trying to figure out what the best way to do this thing is. And it's to know, it's just for the connection with the audience or connection with the thing.
Yeah. I mean, Do you ever wonder if, I wonder if I planned this whole thing, you know, like before I even had a human body. I wonder if I picked this family, picked this body, picked that brain. I wonder, like one of those burger places where you have to check off the boxes of what you want on it. But growing up Jewish in New York and wanting to be a comedian, how lucky was that? I mean, those are advantages, yeah. Huge advantages. Everyone in my family was funny. Yeah. Everyone in New York is funny. And being Jewish, it's a gigantic element of our culture.
Yeah.
So I was given those things. I feel like I was just given those things. And then I wanted to be that thing. So I just felt so privileged. I feel privileged that
yeah.
I had that background. I don't think it would have happened. I don't know. I can't imagine it happening another way. I don't think I could have gotten where I got without those advantages. By the time I was 8, I knew how to tell a joke right, you know?
Yeah.
Because I listened to my relatives, and they would correct you, you know, if you didn't do it right.
So they were Jewish.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So this is a tremendous gift of privilege of background, you know,
yeah.
My background.
Well, that's funny you say, like, was this meant to happen or whatever? When people would say that, like, Julia and Michael and Jason were a different level of acting than you, I always saw you as, it was almost like you were in a deja vu. In a scene, you were like, this is how I thought it was going to be.
Exactly what I was thinking.
Like,
this is what I was hoping this scene would be like.
Yes, and then you would take the satisfaction of the scene being as
yes.
good as you'd hope, and then Jerry, the character, would be like, I broke up with her. But
yes.
it was all the satisfaction
right.
of this thing that you and Larry had imagined.
Because the writing, I really was in love with the writing.
Yeah. It read on your face.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which made me laugh
it's
so
funny.
Hard.
It is funny.
As a writer. Like, no, this is a guy who's enjoying his own writing
yes.
a little bit.
Absolutely.
Do you mind?
Yeah.
If he can't, who will?
Yeah.
Yeah. So as someone who's experienced your life from the outside in.
Right.
And enjoyed the product. Do you take a spiritual lesson from any of this stuff? Do you even?
I don't really know how you're using that word. You gotta.
I guess I'm just thinking like, when you said that it's like destined, it feels like, did I pre-order this? Or it's like, it all goes pretty well and you have the ability to make the right choices consistently.
There's a lot of luck. You know, some of it's luck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fine.
Batting average, what'd the guy say? 85, 850? That's a killer.
Yeah.
Who has an 850 batting average?
No, yeah, nobody.
Nobody. I don't like to appreciate myself.
Except in scenes.
Yeah. No, I'm appreciating that was well written. Yeah. That was well written. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, but even when people say, I like that joke, I like your joke about that, I always go, yeah, it's a good joke, isn't it? And I don't say it like, aren't I great? I just say it like, no, that just just occurred to me. It just came
then
to me.
We are completely the same makeup in that way.
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah, I appreciate it same way you do. I'm just saying, wow, look at that.
Yeah, this is great. I could say it and I'll take the money and everything. But
I do think that's a tremendous asset as a comedian. If you fall in love with how much they love you or whatever, that's not so great. I think that's a hindrance in show business, personally. You really start...
You're not going to get better.
As Gary Marshall used to say, fame is a perfume. You smell it, you don't drink it.
Great. Mulaney actually drank a bottle of perfume as a kid, if we remember.
Because I used to drink too much. And they said, hey, is this whiskey or perfume? I grabbed it, drank all of it, and said, it's perfume.
He was in this joke when he realized he was an alcoholic. So I guess...
I was a little upset not to be included in the comedy breakdown. Did you even try?
All right, I owe you an apology.
I wanted bad to be in
that. This is the second special in a row when I mentioned all the great comedians that were at Ted Sarandos' house. Jerry texted me and said I was gutted to not be included. And then I should have said, Jerry Seinfeld...
Chris Rock's got nonverbal learning disability. Jim Jeffries.
I should have given you the Aspergers. I should have given you the Aspergers.
That would have been great.
And Jim, I gave it to Jim Jeffries because he was on the record as having being a little on the spectrum.
I am also on the record saying it. I don't know if it's true.
I know.
And but I totally buy it.
Would have gotten a bigger laugh. And I realized
really?
That
I no, think I it would have made the right choice
with Jim
Jeffries. Yeah, people knew it.
If I go Jerry Seinfeld, let's face it. it gets an applause break.
Yeah, the other. I'm sorry. I knew I forgot something. This was brilliant.
Thank you.
Brilliant bit.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just like, yeah, it just occurred to me the same way. Pop-Tarts and
frosted food filled meat of a rectangle in the same shape as the box it comes in. And with the same nutrition as the box it comes in.
Yeah.
And first class.
It's
and
your
the,
bit.
Just, oh, your bit.
Then they always have to close that first class curtain, too. And they always give you that little look. Maybe if you had worked a little harder.
Well, what I want to say to you is that it's been great. I've been glad that you're alive when I'm alive.
Oh, that's nice.
And it means I appreciate the material. I appreciate the entertainment, and I appreciate personally the friendship. And I appreciate you staying out of the way of whatever's happening in this in this. Like you're just like, I'm just gonna serve it, and I don't know why.
Right.
And we'll just see what happens.
Right. That's right.
And it's been great.
Thank you.
So Jerry, say goodbye to Jerry Seinfeld and watch Unfrosted on Netflix.